Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Around 2:30 this morning, the Associated Press called the 2016 presidential election for Donald Trump. The billionaire New Yorker, who has never before served in public office, will be president of the United States. On the campaign trail, his language was hot, polarizing. When Trump took the stage for his victory speech, he called for unity.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time.
It's time, but Trump will be leading a starkly divided America, one that he has promised to make great again. This hour on Point, the victory of Donald Trump, president-elect of the United States. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you shocked? Are you thrilled by Trump's victory? What just happened here? How do you read this vote, and what comes now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're also streaming a video feed on Facebook Live today. Check it out at facebook.com/onpointradio. We will turn to the Trump camp in this hour, and we will share Hillary Clinton's anticipated concession speech as soon as she steps to the microphone, if she does. Joining me first from New York is Molly Ball, national political writer for The Atlantic. Molly, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
What happened, Molly?
What happened? Donald Trump won the presidential election. He's the next president of the United States. Didn't you hear?
Yes, I kind of heard. I'm looking here at the vote. Very, very close. Hillary Clinton, as of 9:39 a.m. this morning, ahead in the popular vote by 150,000. But Donald Trump ahead in the Electoral College. That's where it counts in our system. So many heads were shaking and faces were changing complexion last night as these numbers came in. Did the media, did the polling community, did the Democratic world and a big chunk of the Republican world maybe miss this, not see the fullness of this coming?
Well, yes and no. As I wrote in my piece this morning, we knew that there were a lot of people galvanized by Trump's appeal. We knew that he had an appeal that cut across traditional partisan groups. What we didn't know was how many of them there were. And indeed, it may well not be the majority or even the plurality of this electorate. It does look likely that Hillary Clinton may win the popular vote, but it's still the case that in exactly the places where we've been talking about this sort of unorthodox appeal that Donald Trump had, particularly to white voters in small towns, in rural areas, in economically depressed communities, in the Rust Belt, he dramatically overperformed. And in the communities where Hillary Clinton expected that she would compensate for that disadvantage, particularly black and brown and urban communities and with young people, all of these were groups that I knew from my reporting, and I think plenty of people knew from the data and the reporting, were not as enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton as they had been about Barack Obama in the past, were not particularly enthusiastic about voting overall. Her campaign thought that they could substitute mechanics for enthusiasm, and it didn't work.
The forgotten men and women of our country, Donald Trump called that base that came out in his victory speech last night. Again, around 9 a.m. this morning, Donald Trump had 47.5% of the popular vote. Hillary Clinton, 47.6, but he had the electoral votes, 276, and that's what counts in this system. It would make Clinton the fifth U.S. presidential candidate to win the popular vote but lose the election, hardly unprecedented. Last night in New York, or early this morning, Donald Trump said nothing is beyond the reach of Americans in the future that he sees.
America will no longer settle for anything less than the best. We must reclaim our country's destiny and dream big and bold and daring. We have to do that. We're going to dream of things for our country. And beautiful things, and successful things once again.
You hear it right there in New York, and calling out to those forgotten men and women, he said.
Every single American will have the opportunity to realize his or her fullest potential. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer.
Donald Trump at his victory speech in New York last night. Hillary Clinton is, we will have a concession speech from her in this hour. We will bring it to you if and when that appears. Molly Ball is with us from New York. Also with us right now from Washington is Helen Aguirre Ferre with the Republican National Committee. Helen, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
How do you interpret this win, Helen? What was at the heart of it?
Well, no question that it's historic, but I think one of the things that's really at the heart of it is that voters felt thoroughly disenfranchised by the traditional political parties, by the, what is now called the establishment political class, and we're looking for a candidate to come and speak to them directly, shake things up in Washington, D.C., and really make a meaningful difference in their lives, and by that through legislation. So you have the one candidate who presents himself June 15th, 2015, who is the last of the Republican primary candidates to throw his hat in the ring, the one who had no political experience in elected office, and the one everybody totally discounted, and went through month after month after month defying all odds, and yet somehow reaching voters, speaking to voters in unique ways that absolutely made a difference. And that resulted in a historic win last night, where you saw that not only did he overperform with white non-Hispanic voters, but he actually exceeded Mitt Romney's numbers with Hispanic voters 4 years ago. And he did the same thing with black voters, according to our exit polls. Pretty extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Many of those who resisted Donald Trump, at least for a while, and some all the way to the end, were Republican, Helen. And the Republicans will now have both houses of Congress. They'll have the White House. Presumably, they will put forward, Donald Trump will put forward the next nominee for the Supreme Court, which would put a 5-4 Republican kind of majority there, if you want to look at it that way. But is the Republican leadership ready to work with Donald Trump? Is he ready to work with them? Are they on the same page?
I think they really are. I mean, I think that part of the victory that you see is that, you know, a story that, hasn't been told quite so much or so well is that the Republican Party came home. And, you know, when you come to the intimacy of the decision of what to do when you get into the election booth, you have to decide and you look at the names on the ballot. And you look at Donald Trump and Governor Mike Pence, an extraordinary candidate for vice president. And then you look at Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine and you say, okay, so what do I want to do here? Do I want to vote for the, you know, continuing of the status quo in Washington, D.C. with Hillary Clinton, who not only that has left us from a national security aspect with a more insecure and dangerous world than ever before, or do we want to vote for somebody who is really talking about peace through strength? And when talking about national political policies and economic policies, Donald Trump was really bold enough to talk about the issues of needing to renegotiate trade deals, not being anti-trade, not being protectionist, but protecting interests of American workers by negotiating better deals, which ultimately Hillary Clinton then came and said that she as well agreed with that. When you look at issues such as the Iran deal with the United States that's really enriching Iran, that's not working. That's not working well. When you look at issues that have to do with immigration, we need to make legal immigration easier and illegal immigration harder. We do it the other way around, and then we're totally surprised by the outcomes. We have policies that don't make sense, and the only one who really was bold enough and to address them and to talk about the demise of the urban centers and to talk about the need to incentivize companies to bring sophisticated manufacturing back to our country was Donald Trump. And I think voters are smart. They were listening. And not only did they listen to him, he was also listening to them.
Molly Ball, we've got the Republican National Committee communications director here for the Hispanic communications director, Helen Aguirre Ferre. You hear her take on this. Donald Trump says he wants to go to Washington and drain the swamp, change a lot of policy. A lot of that policy was made by Republicans, and drain the swamp, it's majority Republican. How does this work, Molly?
Well, I think when he talked about draining the swamp, it was very clear from his own rhetoric that he was referring to what he and to what a lot of voters saw as a corrupt culture in Washington, the culture of, you know, lobbyists and elites and donors all scratching each other's backs. And, you know, it was hard to see Trump as anything but an outsider. You could say, oh, he was part of the wealthy elite, oh, he was part of the donor class, but it was very clear from the way the establishment reacted to him that they saw him as a threat.
But how do they react now? Half of that establishment, at least, is Republican.
Well, they didn't like Trump either, right? They worked overtime to try to get him out of the Republican primaries, and they failed. And they worked overtime to disqualify him in the general election. You had an unprecedented number of Republicans, whether elected officials or, you know, operatives and staffers or commentators and so on, warning of the dangers of a Trump presidency and trying to exert their influence, and it had very little effect on the actual voters of their party. It was very, very interesting, very telling that when Donald Trump clashed with someone like Paul Ryan, the base of the Republican Party overwhelmingly sided with Trump. It was clear that he was offering them something that they didn't feel they were getting from their elected leaders or from their party leaders. And so, you know, the drain the swamp mantra, it was funny to hear Trump start using that slogan in the last couple of weeks because he said he didn't want to. And there was this funny dance where he would sort of make fun of what was on his own teleprompters and say, they gave me this slogan to use. I thought it was hokey, but then I started using it and people loved it. And so now I love it too. And he compared it to Frank Sinatra not liking his classic song, My Way. So there was this instinct that Trump had for giving people what they wanted, even when he wasn't so sure that he agreed with it. And it was also very clear that there was this anti-establishment fervor all the way across the electorate, that it was expressed in part in Bernie Sanders' campaign on the left, and it was expressed in this swath of the electorate that I don't think was part of the Republican or the Democratic base. People who'd never voted in Republican primaries before came out and responded to Trump's message. And a lot of people who either didn't always vote in general elections or didn't always vote Republican were galvanized yesterday.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour about the victory of Donald Trump, president-elect of the United States, what this says, what comes next. You can join us this hour. What just happened here? Are you stunned? Are you vindicated? Thrilled? Were you up all night? Are you still absorbing? Were you one of those quiet Trump voters who stayed mum and checked the box? And what does this outcome mean for this country? Here was Donald Trump last night celebrating in New York, reaching out to political opponents, he said.
For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and your help so that we can work together and unify our great country.
Hillary Clinton, no remarks last night. The country standing by for that today. Early this morning, very early, her campaign manager, John Podesta, took the stage at the Javits Center in New York, talked with Clinton supporters.
Your voices and your enthusiasm mean so much to her and to Tim and to all of us. We are so proud of you. And we are so proud of her. She's done an amazing job, and she is not done yet.
Cheers there, but it was very, very solemn at the Democratic headquarters last night and beyond. I mean, Donald Trump used some pretty rough language in this campaign, a lot of racially charged language on CNN last night. Commentator Van Jones, African-American, said Donald Trump needs to reach out to minority communities that he offended during the election.
This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside.
Helen Aguirre Ferre is with us from the Republican National Committee, Molly Ball from The Atlantic. Helen, what about that? This has been widely portrayed in Democratic quarters as a kind of nostalgia vote for an America that's gone demographically. Make America Great Again, looking backward. And you hear Van Jones upset right there. What do you say to that? To minorities in this country who today feel, after all the language on the campaign trail, wait a minute, where's our place in this country? Where's our place in Donald Trump's world?
Well, there's no question that, you know, Donald Trump is looking. Donald Trump went to Detroit. Donald Trump went to black churches. He went and reached out to the community. He said, what have you got to lose? Democrats have taken you for granted and haven't given you a better future. And he's absolutely right. Our nation's divided, not because of Donald Trump. Our nation has been divided because of failed policies of the last 7.5 years. And that's not based on racism. That's based on, look at an economy that on a good day is barely struggling at 2.5%. That's pretty anemic when you take into account the strength of our nation and what we can be when we are really allowed to be unleashed. And so I think it's not looking for a country that's looking back to its history to be all white. It's a country that's longing for a government that really responds to the needs of the people and the middle class in particular. So when you look at the Hispanic community, well, the Hispanic community is not monolithic. We don't speak with one voice, nor do we belong with one party. We are Americans, and like every other American, we have the right to choose and to question. And so you see that, for example, you know, according to exit polls, we saw that Hispanic vote in Florida was 34%. In Texas, it was 34%. North Carolina, it was 38%. These are numbers that are pretty significant and really make
for Trump, difference. You're saying, yeah.
These are votes that went for Trump. And mm-hmm. So you look at this and you say, well, these are people who are looking at the need for the economy to be addressed properly, national security, school choice, religious liberty. I think there's one aspect here that, you know, we are just beginning to see, and that's that number one, ground game really matters. And at the Republican National Committee, we have been working for the last 4 years for yesterday to make sure that we had the proper ground game and proper engagement with the community.
Did you really have it, or just a grassroots uprising for Mr. Trump?
We really had it, and we had the best data, our data and our polling, and we were talking about it for the last 2 weeks, saying, you know, it's trending in our direction. We're looking at where we're going in early votes and absentee ballots. We were way ahead of where we were in 2012, and we weren't wrong. And those numbers proved right last night. And so you look at that, and that's all about voter engagement. It's not just taking a poll and not talking to voters. We've been working long and hard. And so we saw, you know, we were originally surprised by what we saw early on in the primary, that there was such anger and dissatisfaction with what was going on. And then, you know, we turned around, we started listening better, and we heard that voters were saying, and for Donald Trump, 2 million more votes than any other Republican primary candidate in our Republican primary history.
Were you lucky that an outsider won your primary, Helen?
I'm sorry.
Were you lucky that an outsider won the primary if you had all that anger going on? Was he able to harvest that in a way that the inside crowd, almost all the other candidates, might not have?
I think in a way, the voters were looking for somebody who was absolutely different, somebody who was going to come in and shake things up. And that's what voters are looking for. Somebody who's going to come in and shake things up, because what we've been seeing year after year after year is that, unfortunately, too many career politicians come in, they promise what they know they will never deliver just to be able to win an election. And what people are looking for is someone who's going to be plain-spoken, honest. Yes, sometimes the rhetoric is harsh, but at the same time, is it someone who's saying what many people are actually thinking and being sincere? And they found that person in Donald Trump, who in many meetings where I have been with him, he is absolutely sincere when he's stunned by the fact that 22 veterans commit suicide a day in our country.
We will see about promises and delivery here. It's a big mountain and a big challenge. I know we have to let you go, Helen, but I appreciate your being with us. Helen Aguirre-Ferre with the Republican National Committee. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Here are Trump supporters at his speech early this morning chanting. Well, you'll hear it. Trump rally last night, early this morning. Molly Ball, stand by. Lots of callers, and then we want to go and dig into what happened here on the numbers side. Matt in Atlanta, Georgia. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think the real news in this election is the people are tired of corruption in politics and the media. You know, Hillary clearly cheated Bernie out of the primary through the use of superdelegates. And for over a year, I have heard the media talk constantly about every petty thing that Trump has ever said while ignoring to address the high crimes and misdemeanors of Hillary Clinton. James Comey is unfit for service, in my opinion. He's exonerated her twice when she should be indicted for things that you and I would be put in prison for. Deleting 33,000 emails after receiving a subpoena, totally unacceptable. After the release of the WikiLeaks emails, we see the incestuous relationship between the media and politicians, and people are tired of it.
Matt, we've got it. Elites, media, politicians, you feel let down. Trump will be the president. I appreciate your call from Atlanta, Essex, Iowa. Brad is calling. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to step into the light. I'm one of those people that held their nose and voted for Trump yesterday. And I did that because as an independent voter, I really felt the Democrats didn't offer a viable candidate who would survive her first year in office. I believe she would have been impeached because of the Clinton Foundation scandals, and I don't think our country can go through another Clinton impeachment.
Hey, Brad, let me ask you. I mean, on this show, we've talked for a long time about the huge inequality gap that's opened up in this country, and maybe that's part of what has people ticked off about elites, that it just wasn't closing year after year after year, and people felt cheated about that. If Donald Trump is addressing that, we'll see. But if he is, I get that. What about the temperament piece? Hillary Clinton tried to make a lot of that, that this guy's just too hot-headed to be commander-in-chief and more. Did that give you pause, Brad?
Huge pause. And like I say, I had to hold my nose, but some of the things that he said as a father and husband were particularly bothersome and troublesome. They weren't petty to me. They were serious things. But again, given a choice between a rock and a hard place, I chose the hard place.
Brad, we've got it. One more, and I want to go to Anna Greenberg and Dan Judy, Lorraine in Maynard, Massachusetts. Lorraine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I'm just so devastated and depressed and in shock this morning. I went to bed last night not feeling very positive, woke up in the middle of the night to hear the news, and I just feel like what's worse, in my opinion, than Trump becoming president is the House and Senate also, you know, getting the Republicans as majority and the ability to win over the Supreme Court now that they successfully were able to bar Barack Obama from nominating someone to fill the missing seat there. And I'm just in shock that this country has become so not just divided, but basically is feeling so negative and so hurtful and hateful towards so many people who really give so much to this country. I'm just so sad.
I mean, we hear that the Canadian immigration website crashed today with, I don't know, Americans looking at that. Where's your hope now, Lorraine? Or what's the depth of your despair, if that's what it is?
I'll be honest with you. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and my hope is that she doesn't remember this and that we can move on in 4 years. I don't really have much hope for the next 4 years, and I know that sounds really, I don't know that sounds terrible, but I'm going to try to remain positive for her. But I grew up in a country, I grew up in the 80s, where women had come so far in this country, and I feel like we're going to take huge steps back. I have black friends. I have Mexican friends. I have children, Mexican friends whose children are saying, when is the wall going to be built? And that's not, I'm not making that up. These are real things that people are saying. I have black friends who are originally from Jamaica who are saying they might move back there now. They're afraid to be here. It's not just Trump and the government. It's the people, the supporters of Trump and this movement, who are frightening. Frankly,
that's the sound of devastation, right there from Lorraine. Among those, and by the latest count, more than half the popular vote who were not going for Donald Trump. But he's got the Electoral College, and that's the way it works. Molly Ball with The Atlantic, please stand by there in New York. Dan Judy joins us now from Washington, Vice President at North Star Opinion Research. Dan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And Anna Greenberg, Senior VP at GQRR, Greenberg, Quinlan, Rosner Research. Anna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Anna, you watch the poll numbers very closely in the exit polls with a kind of Democratic perspective. Dan, with a Republican perspective. What happened here, Anna?
Well, to quote Molly, Trump won.
That we got.
Okay. A lot of things happened here. This remains, I think, a deeply divided country. You have Hillary Clinton, who won the popular vote, and likely her margin will grow once California and some other states have fully counted their votes. And, you know, Trump won the Electoral College. And if you look at the exit polls, it really does speak to a very divided country with a very unclear mandate for Trump. There's some really, really interesting stuff in there. I mean, not the least of which is a majority of people oppose building a wall. People oppose, you know, stopping our reforms of the criminal justice system. People, a plurality, oppose repealing and replacing Obamacare. So a lot of the signature issues that Trump ran on, actually, majority of this electorate opposed.
But he won, and so many pundits and pollsters were not predicting that at the beginning of the vote count last night. The blue wall and all that crumbled.
Well, do you want to have a polling discussion or substantive? Like, I'm happy to talk about the polling. I mean,
are they so different?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think there's no question that everybody was quote unquote wrong about what was going to happen. I think Democrats and Republicans, the Clinton campaign, the Trump campaign, nobody expected last night's outcome. There's no question about that. But I do think that we make unfair demands on polling, which is to say that polls do not predict turnout. It looks like we're going to have the lowest turnout since 2000. Really big drop of Clinton voters relative to Obama voters, a smaller drop of Trump voters to Romney voters. And when you have that kind of volatility in turnout, that is something polls cannot measure. You have to have a model of the electorate in order to actually conduct your survey. So a big part of this was what the electorate looked like that showed up on election day, something that polls really have a very, very hard time measuring. The other thing I would add, and again, I know I sound defensive here, but as someone who does this for a living and where most of my internal polls were pretty accurate this cycle, I knew that we were going to lose most of our down ballot races, to be honest with you. You know, if you look at the average error in presidential polling since the late 70s, there's an average of 2 to 3 point error. Clearly, Clinton is going to win the popular vote. She's going to be within that margin of error. So I'm not suggesting that there's no question that she lost the election and that was at odds with what the predictions, pretty much every prediction, you know, in every aggregator website,
et cetera. But pay attention to that margin of error.
But that margin of error, you know, and so is polling fundamentally broken? No. Did we not, you know, really accurately measure what was going to happen in this election? Yes. That being said, I just want to emphasize that this is still a very divided country. Mm. We did not miss a huge mandate for Donald Trump, per se.
Dan Judy, was this turnout or was this the secret Trump voter, people who didn't tell pollsters one way or another what they intended to do when they checked the box?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I found myself around 1 o'clock, 1:30 this morning, quoting the great political philosopher Han Solo, saying, "This is not how I thought this day was going to go." Hillary Clinton had a consistent lead in all the public polling averages for months. She was in a range of about 46 to 48. Donald Trump was in a range of about 40 to 42. The interesting thing, when I sat down and thought, okay, at about 2 a.m. last night, what in the world is going on? I started looking at her actual vote percentages compared to the polling averages, and finally leading to the election. What I found was she was polling like an incumbent, and which maybe is not surprising, given that she was running for a third party term, and the president had been out there very, very strongly for the last couple of weeks of the campaign. Incumbents, particularly incumbents who are not very popular, tend to get what they get. That's exactly what happened with her. So just as a couple of examples, her national polling average, the final average was 47%. She's now at about 47.5%. And a lot of the states, the red states that she won, as well as the blue wall states that sort of crumbled killed for her, every single one of those was in 1 or 2 points of her final polling average. In the end, all the undecideds and a chunk of Gary Johnson voters ended up going for Trump.
Dan Judy at North Star Opinion Research, Republican pollster. Dan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Anna Greenberg at GQRR, looking out for Democrats there. Anna, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the victory of Donald Trump, now president-elect of the United States, what it says, what comes next. You can join us this hour. Do we just go forward as a divided nation? Do we work together somehow? How does that work after this campaign, after this result? Here's Donald Trump in his victory speech in New York City. At this hour, we're still waiting for Hillary Clinton. She's to speak sometime this morning, potentially while we're on air right here, right now, but we'll keep you apprised. Here's Trump saying he spoke with Hillary Clinton on the phone last night, congratulated her on her hard-fought campaign.
Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely.
And here's Trump's campaign manager Kelly Conway talking about the so-called undercover Trump voters who turned out apparently to help elect Donald Trump.
The undercover Trump vote that I talked about months ago under a hail of criticism, it was real. And not because they don't want to say they're voting for him, but because they really took a chance to vote for somebody who's never been in politics before, has never worked in government before.
We're looking at what just happened with Molly Ball, national political writer for The Atlantic. She's with us from New York. And with us right now as well, McKay Coppins, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News. McKay Coppins, welcome back to On Point. Here we are. Republican Party has Donald Trump. They're going to have Congress, they're going to have the White House, and after another nomination and presumably at some point a sign-off by the Senate, a friendly Supreme Court, what do you see coming in Washington, McKay?
Well, it's good to be on just a few hours after leaving the Trump party last night. I've been texting with and emailing with my Republican sources all through last night, and it's remarkable the number of people who are part of the political class in Washington, Republican strategists, donors, lobbyists, who are really mourning today, mourning Trump's victory. It speaks to this division between the elites and the kind of populist grassroots and the average voter that Trump really exposed.
Republicans mourning. What are they mourning exactly?
Well, look, you know, a lot of the Republicans I talk to, believe, like, frankly, a lot of Democrats, that Donald Trump has not shown an ability, grasp of the issues, a temperament that would be conducive to being commander-in-chief. But also, I think this is more important and perhaps more interesting, Trump's platform was not traditionally conservative, was not traditionally Republican on many issues. He has now brought in a new era of Republicanism that looks a lot more nationalist, a lot more economically populist, a lot less interested in small government than past Republicans and frankly a lot of Republicans in Congress. And so question marks in the party right now about what the GOP stands for going forward. Trump is the disputed leader of not just the country, but the Republican Party. And there are questions about whether this will lead to an ideological realignment and a political realignment where some people who are traditional Republican voters just don't identify with the party that Trump now leads.
Molly Ball, talk about the divisions now within the Republican Party and, for that matter, within the Democratic Party as we take all this on board today.
Well, I think McKay's right. And one of the interesting things about the result of this election is what an unclear signal it sends in terms of policy. You have a Republican House and Senate resoundingly reelected that largely was diametrically opposed to this sort of platform McKay's talking about that Trump articulated. And so, and at the same time, you know, I was also texting and talking to a lot of unhappy Republicans last night, which is an interesting phenomenon when your party's just won a presidential election. But one of the hopes that they voiced was, particularly for sort of moderate Republicans and even for some very conservative Republicans, okay, maybe Trump is the one who can move us away from this absolutism, this obstructionism. Since he's not much of a conservative anyway, maybe he's the one who can break through the gridlock, get Washington working again by making deals with Democrats, by doing things that Republicans wouldn't do. It's a sort of only Nixon could go to China sort of theory of the case. I don't think we know, and I think that's part of what gives so many in the sort of intellectual elite pause about Trump is it's never been clear what he stands for or what his priorities would be in terms of governing, and so that's very unclear going forward. The Republican Party, on the one hand, is strengthened by this result, but on the other hand, it has been smashed by Trump, and it's going to either be reformed in his image or it's going to continue to be at war. The Democratic Party is clearly going to devolve into finger-pointing, dismay, disillusionment. There's a lot of shock, horror, and general upsetness among liberals and Democrats. You know, the question is, I think it would have been the same question if Hillary Clinton had won this presidential election, frankly. The question is, can we come together given how divided we have seen that we are as a country? Can people reach for mutual understanding, or are they going to continue to insist on being, you know, horrified and offended by everybody who doesn't vote like they do?
Was it a mistake for the Democrats not to put Bernie Sanders forward in the end, Molly? They've lost.
Well, I'm not in the business of giving advice to political parties, and we can't know what would have happened in an alternate reality. But you definitely do have some on the left saying that this is proof that Hillary was the wrong nominee for the Democratic Party. She clearly had deficiencies that played right into the outsider narrative of Trump. She was the ultimate insider. He kept saying it was a change election. She kept saying, no, it wasn't. and maybe it was in the end. So, you know, the question is going to be, given that the Democratic primary did reveal pretty deep ideological divides in the Democratic Party, how do they try to find leaders going forward? How do they try to reconstitute themselves and try to win back an American majority in the future? And I don't think that's clear at all.
McKay, I mean, you've got people just howlingly depressed, devastated on the Democratic side today. You're talking about Republicans who are not necessarily happy because they've got all their own divisions. But you've got a popular vote that goes for Hillary Clinton. Okay, that's happened before. We've got the Electoral College. We could debate that. But what happens to this monumental despair now of people looking at a vision of the future that they saw as progressive, diverse, and positive for this country at many levels, and Donald Trump comes in with a vision that, I mean, he's talking unity and nice today, but throughout the campaign, we heard lots and lots of highly divisive rhetoric. If we were divided before, what on earth does this suggest, McKay?
No, yeah, I mean, I think you have a lot of people waking up this morning feeling like they live in a country that they didn't realize they lived in, that this is a different country than they than the one they thought they belonged to. But look, I mean, last night at Trump's election night party, you heard the chants that had become a common refrain throughout this general election of lock her up. You know, Trump supporters saying they want to lock up Hillary Clinton. There are a lot of questions going forward. You know, if Donald Trump he says he wants to bring America together. He wants to be a voice for those who supported him and those who didn't support him. You know, his speech last night, in a lot of ways, was a very traditional victory speech for a presidential candidate.
But I've seen him smile and pump his fist to lock her up for months.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. So one of the very first questions that needs to be answered, he promised not 3 weeks ago that he was going to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Clinton if he won. So is he going to do that, right? There are a lot of other questions. I mean, frankly, people have not spent, because there was so much confidence, especially in the political class and frankly among the media, that Hillary Clinton was going to win. People have not spent, you know, there are a lot of questions that are just now coming to us. I mean, is Donald Trump going to have a traditional White House press corps? There's no law that says he has to, and certainly he hasn't shown a lot of reverence for those kind of press traditions.
To say the least, I've never heard a presidential candidate speak with such vituperation about the press. I mean, again and again, just bashing, smashing the press.
No, right. As somebody who's been covering dozens of those rallies and getting booed at every one of them, I can attest to that. You know, he could appoint as many as three Supreme Court justices. What kind of justices will those be? What will that look like? I mean, there are a lot of big questions. And, you know, if you're talking about a divided country, certainly it seems like we're more divided than we've been in a long time. Donald Trump, I think, has a responsibility, as any president does, to do what he can to try to heal those divisions, or at least make it so that our country can function and people feel like they can live in this country.
Does he have that capacity? Does he have that capacity, McKay? I mean, on the campaign trail, he would go again and again to the more pugilistic face and seem to really rise to that. I mean, he's doing this. He gave the speech early this morning, but do you see it in him to really be the healer, the unifier? And can he do that when he's promised? He's made promises that within them is a ton of contention.
I have not seen, I've been covering Trump now for a very long time, or feels like a very long time. I have not seen that ability in him, frankly. I hope that I'm wrong. I think we should all be hoping that we're wrong about that. I have not yet seen that, an ability to be a unifier, to be a healer. But look, I mean, he's going to have to learn a lot on this job, and hopefully that's one skill or characteristic he can try to pick up.
Lots of callers waiting here. Albuquerque, New Mexico. Matt, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just curious where the 700-point slump in the stock market is. And also, you know, just echoing a lot of people calling in, I'm very disappointed with the mainstream media. I think the polls were wrong all along, and I think they were targeted to be wrong, you know, to sway voters. I think late last night, the media was talking about a 700-point drop in the Dow Jones Industrial, and that never happened. In fact, it was up this morning. It's down about 15 points right now, which is a huge difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was Dow futures, and for a while they were pointing way down. I haven't kept up with it as we're on the air here, but as you say, it's not down nearly that much now.
Right. You know, that was a last ditch attempt to maybe sway some of the voters that were still hitting the. That came out early before some polling stations had closed.
Man, I get that. I mean, but then the media doesn't control what the investors do with Dow Jones futures. But I take your point. I mean, Molly, it was interesting when the media talked about Donald Trump as a real potential winner. They were accused of normalizing his candidacy, which opponents thought should not even be discussed in normal terms. You know, when they cast doubt on his capacity to win, they're described as, you know, missing or hiding what was actually sitting out there. What about the media and Mr. Trump, Molly?
Well, look, all we're trying to do is tell the truth as best we can figure it out. We don't have a crystal ball. We can't predict the future. We can look at the data available to us and try to draw conclusions from it. But I think it is always important for us who are journalists to be humble and not make assumptions. And, you know, the errors in the polling are really interesting. That's obvious. That's what I base a lot of my reporting on, because pollsters are talking to a lot more Americans than I can ever get to. So you say, okay, the polls are telling me that this group of voters is voting in this way, and let's go out and figure out why that is. Let's go out and try to understand those people. As Anna Greenberg was saying, this is not a resounding mandate for either side. Yes, Donald Trump has won the Electoral College quite convincingly and will be the next president. You also have a seemingly plurality of American voters going the other way. So what I draw from that is that this is a deeply divided country, and we don't have a lot of mutual understanding. And I've always thought that the most important story in any, the most interesting story in any presidential election, isn't necessarily who wins. It's why and how and what are we fighting over? What is dividing us as a country? This election has reordered that landscape in a lot of ways. It's changed the conversation that we thought we were having, the fight we thought we were having about ideas and about policy in this country. And so, you know, as a journalist, I want to go out and try and get my head around that.
Wendy in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Wendy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I live in a suburb of Milwaukee. I am a white, college-educated woman and a registered Democrat, and I voted for Trump because I and many people here that live near me feel forgotten and overlooked by the media and the current political machine. We listen to NPR in my household, and I've done that for years. This is the first time in the past few months I've had to literally turn it off because it sounded like we were moving toward a coronation and not a free and fair election. Your reporting was not fair or objective. Here in my community, we believe in capitalism. We believe in entrepreneurialism. It's what makes our country great. Career politicians do not. In our schools, we have a culture ambassadors program that celebrates the huge number of legal immigrants that are here in our community. We love them. My brother is gay and is married to his partner. I love his partner like a brother. Nobody called and polled me.
Wendy, we've got it. Our time is short before we run out of it, but I appreciate your call. I mean, elites, McKay, was something to listen to. Is this a backlash against elites? Is it about, backlash against inequity? Are those the same thing? Is it about disrespect?
Yeah. I think a lot of this is about it's about culture. It's about people feeling condescended to, treated with disdain by people in the media, by people in politics. That caller, though, is an important demographic last night. We've heard a lot about, you know, a white working class revolt. There was a spike in turnout in rural areas and exurban areas. And certainly that is a big part of the story. But if you're digging into the numbers this morning, it's also clear that Clinton suffered in areas where white college-educated voters broke heavily for Obama and didn't break as heavily for Hillary Clinton. So people like that caller have shown that this is not merely about, you know, economic anxiety or things like that we've been talking about throughout this election. I think that is part of the story, but it's also just a cultural divide. It's a feeling that people in power are not listening to them, and those people turned out in large numbers yesterday to vote for Donald Trump.
McKay Coppins with BuzzFeed News. Thank you so much for being with us, McKay. Wendy in outside Milwaukee, stick with us. Ears wide open. Molly Ball at The Atlantic, thank you so much for joining us today. We're waking up to a new day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.